Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by and welcome to Investor Call FY 2019 Results. At this time, all participants are in listen-only mode. After the speaker presentation, there will be a question and answer session. To ask a question during the session, you will need to press star one on your telephone. I would now like to hand the conference over to the speaker today, Mr. Nigel Garrard. Thank you. Please go ahead.
Thanks, operator, and good morning, everybody, and thank you for joining us today, and welcome to the Orora Group's results call. Today I'm joined by Brian Lowe, our incoming Managing Director and CEO, and Stuart Hutton, our CFO. Today I'll start by giving an overview of our full year results for 2019, and then I'll hand over to Stuart, who will take you through corporate costs, cash flow, and debt position. Brian will then conclude with an update on Orora's sustainability program, the progress of our strategy, and some commentary on the perspectives about the outlook for FY 2020. At the conclusion of the presentation, Stuart, Brian, and I will be happy to take your questions. Before I start, I just want to point out the important information on slide two. Today, through the presentation, we'll be referencing underlying earnings. You will all know that on the 2nd of August, we announced we would recognize a significant item after-tax expense of 55.8 million in our statutory results, and we'll provide some further detail on that in a moment. In FY 2018, you'll also remember that we had significant items that were derived after excluding we will exclude a net significant item expense of 1.9 million, which relates to the closure of a Smithfield site and some additional costs associated with decommissioning of Petrie, and a one-off tax adjustment gain of 5.5 million resulting from the changes of tax rates in the U.S. We're doing this just so that it helps everybody understand the underlying operating performance of the business. If I look to our full year results, we're pleased to report another positive year of earnings growth despite a challenging trading year, particularly in North America, with underlying NPAT up 4% on the prior corresponding period at 217 million dollars. The result was driven, you will have seen, by a solid performance in Australasia, which helped offset lower earnings from North America. The result included benefits from recent acquisitions and our continuing capital investments to deliver customer-led product solutions and to improve our productivity. Operationally, the business delivered EBIT growth of 3.7% through higher output at the B9 mill. This year was a record production year for B9, so we've certainly got that mill now operating at or above design capacity. The ongoing focus on improving manufacturing and operating efficiency across the Australasian business, which is a consistent theme that we've had over the last four or five years. We saw higher can volumes and favorable glass and cans product mix, and some positive translational FX impact from our U.S. dollar earnings. The board declared a final dividend of 0.065 a share, partially franked to 30%. The total dividend for FY 2019 is 0.13 per share, which represents an increase of 4% on the prior comparative period. That equates to a payout ratio of approximately 72% of NPAT, which is slightly above the top end of our indicated range and further highlights the continued confidence the board has in the business. Looking at cash conversion at 56%, this was in line with our expectations, but below the prior corresponding period. The prior period included proceeds from the sale of Smithfield land of 45.5 million. The cash flow reflected continued heightened capital investment in our business, mixed seasonal conditions in Australasia, leading to higher inventories, and certainly some additional planned inventory being held for capital investment, inventory builds in both the fiber and the glass businesses. Return on average funds employed was down 100 points to 13% on the prior corresponding period, reflecting lower earnings in OPS in North America and the lower seasonal contribution from the acquisition of Pollock. Just as a reminder, the Pollock business is 70-30, so 70% in the first half of a fiscal year and 30% in the second half of the fiscal year. So we had the smaller contribution during FY19, and we would expect a stronger contribution in this coming half. Investing in future growth remains a key strategic priority, and during the period, Aurora spent about 150% of depreciation, with $180 million, or nearly $181 million, on base and growth projects, and we invested a further $140 million on acquisitions in North America. The Global Innovation Initiative of $75 million has continued and delivering to our expectations, and we've committed about $66 million under that initiative. Turning to page four and the significant items, as I said, excuse me, we recognised an after-tax SI of $55.8 million, and this consists of $35 million for additional decommissioning costs of the Petrie site and $20.8 million for restructuring and some asset impairment charges. Going into that into a little more detail, in relation to Petrie, the decommissioning of the site is a significant and complex exercise involving multiple government agencies. With an amended contract having recently been entered into with the landowner, the scope for the final phase of remediation and decommissioning was able to be finalised, and this resulted in the estimated cost to complete the decommissioning being higher than previously contemplated. We have engaged a specialist environmental consulting firm to manage the completion of the works. In terms of cash flow, the costs are expected to be relatively evenly phased over the next three financial years, and there are residual proceeds of $10 million from the sale of that land, which will be collected evenly over FY20 and FY21. Going back to May, Aurora announced that in response to the slower start to earnings experienced in early calendar 2019, cost structures in both Australasia and North America were being reviewed. We have since completed this review and determined that certain parts of the business require restructuring to ensure operations are optimised and the cost base aligns with the expected market outlook. From a time and a cash flow perspective, the majority of the initiatives will be implemented in the first half of FY20, with some spilling over into early calendar 2020. As part of this review, we looked at some assets, and that resulted in a non-cash impairment charge of $3.7 million after tax. There's no material effect on our earnings from this impairment charge. The expected return on the restructuring initiatives is circa 30% in FY20 and circa 65% in FY21. The roughly $17 million of restructuring initiatives are allocated between Australasia at about 50%, North America at 40%, and corporate at 10%. Turning now to safety. You will have all heard me say many times that the safety of our team members is a fundamental priority. In FY19, increases in both recordable and lost time injury frequency rates were seen, and frankly, that's just unacceptable. Last November, Aurora launched an independent global review of safety practices. This review is complete in Australasia and nearing completion in North America. It has provided great insights into where the opportunities exist to better focus on our safety improvement actions. And this includes things like maintaining the focus on education and training, continuing the rollout of comprehensive risk profile reviews, implementing appropriate mitigation plans for high risk hazards and sites, excuse me, and ensuring Aurora's tools and processes reflect industry best standard. It remains a priority of the business, and I know that Brian Lowe, when he assumes the MD and CEO role, will bring the same passion for safety as we go forward. During the year, in addition to the global review, We also launched a new alcohol and drug policy, and implementation of this policy has included extensive education, testing and support programs across the Australasian business. Moving now to the business segments and Australasia, I'll start with Australasia, where we saw another solid performance. Underlying sales grew by 1.5% during the period. Our fibre earnings were slightly higher than the prior year. Some key notes to key points to note. B9 had a record production year, as I said. Fibre volumes were higher in most processed food, fresh produce, and meat sectors compared to the prior corresponding period. However, we did see some unfavourable seasonal conditions in some regions adversely affecting volumes. As an example, the kiwi fruit season in New Zealand, which is a big part of our New Zealand business, the kiwi fruit season produced smaller fruit due to adverse growing conditions, and that meant a lower number of boxes that was needed to be supplied to that part of the market. In fibre, still, our ongoing operational efficiency and cost improvement programs continued, and they supported the improvement in results and efficiencies and helped offset the impact of higher input costs in areas like kraft paper, starch, electricity, pardon me, and imported cardboard. The beverage business's earnings were higher, driven by higher can volumes, favourable product mix in cans and glass, and continued improvement in operating efficiencies across all of the beverage businesses. The cans business in particular was strong, with the trend of switching from other substrates, particularly plastic, continuing, and demand for mainstream and craft beers in cans continuing to grow. Our glass volumes were down on record numbers in FY18, largely driven by reduced export volumes in the wine market. Much of this volume reduction was offset by market share gains in beer and increased volumes in non-alcoholic beverages such as kombucha. Importantly, in Australasia, top line growth has translated into higher profitability. Pardon me, I've got a bit of a cold. But with EBIT up 6.2% despite the cost headwinds pardon me, of kraft paper, electricity and starch, the effect of which was about $13 million. Our EBIT margin in Australasia grew 50 points to 11.5% as a result. We are continuing to invest in our Australasian business and believe the success we are seeing flow from this CapEx supports that focus. In FY19, $144 million was invested in organic capital, and this included the asset refresh program in fibre continuing at a heightened level. We expect this program to continue into the future, albeit at a somewhat lower intensity as we consolidate on the investments that we've made thus far. We also had the final stages of commissioning the secondary water treatment plant at B9. And you may recall in FY18, the glass business committed $50 million to upgrade existing warehouses and to build a new on-site warehouse at Gawler to hold our inventory on-site and to reduce off-site pallet storage and transport costs. The upgrade was completed in early calendar 2019, pardon me, and the new warehouse is on track to be delivered by December 2019. Preparation work has continued at Gawler for the rebuild of the second furnace, which is scheduled to take place between February and April 2020. The total cost of the rebuild is circa $50 million, with the majority to be spent in the coming financial year. Return on average funds employed in Australasia was steady at 13.4%, with increased earnings offset by the recent capital investments and heightened working capital, mainly due to the seasonal and capital project-related increases in inventory that I referred to earlier. Turning to slide seven, the earnings bridge highlights the growth in the Australasian EBIT of 6.2%, and the organic earnings growth has once again offset the input cost headwinds that we continue to see in the Australasian business. Turning now to North America. As we've discussed recently, market conditions in North America are generally tough in the sectors that we serve, and this was even more pronounced in the second half of the financial year. We've noted the reports from other companies in the packaging sector in North America and have seen a constant theme in those. While in US dollar terms, sales grew 12.4% to $1.86 billion, EBIT declined 11% to $83.4 million. This is a result of the generally tough market conditions, which impacted volumes and margins in OPS, and to a lesser extent, the earnings reset at OV from the loss of the AT&T business during FY 2018. These, combined with other factors, flowed through to the EBIT margin, which was lower at 4.5%. In response to the tough market conditions, we've implemented a number of initiatives aimed at improving processes, efficiencies, and taking costs out of the business. This earnings improvement program has recently been bolstered with further dedicated external resources brought into the business to ensure that we have the right focus and urgency to deliver on the initiatives that have been identified. While these initiatives progressively gain traction in FY 2019, most of the benefits are expected to impact in FY 2020, and the costs associated with implementing this program have been included in the group-wide restructuring initiative that I talked about in relation to the SI. Cash conversion in the U.S. was solid at 69%, which was in line with our expectations. With the decline in earnings, we saw a decline in ROAFE as a result of the earnings decline, but also the dilutionary effect of the Bronco and Pollock acquisitions, which we have talked to you about in the past. Constant currency revenue growth at OPS was approximately 14.1%, predominantly from acquisitions, as I said, with net organic growth around 1% or a little higher. This reflects the challenging market conditions I talked about. The functional and organizational integration of Bronco and Pollock, our two acquisitions in Texas, has added some 500 people to the North American business, and that integration continues to be on track with the accountability for delivery of synergies and integration clearly embedded. The focus on the customer experience and delivering the synergies are both tracking to plan. As I said earlier, it's important to understand Pollock's earnings are weighted approximately 70% in the first half of Orora's fiscal year, which is the half that we're currently in. In terms of investment activity, the ERP system rollout has been completed, and the transition costs are progressively being removed as part of the restructure program. The manufacturing division has commissioned a new six-color press in Northern California, and this has provided a step-up capability and opened new higher value-add markets in that part of the country. In Southern California, the new high-speed large format digital printer, which is the same as the printer commissioned by Fibre Packaging in Victoria, has been commissioned and is already enhancing our value proposition. From an Orora Visual perspective, they've continued to successfully build out their value proposition to serve national corporate customers, and the offering of a consistent point of purchase, visual communication, and fulfillment business is being offered across our multiple locations. Orora Visual has two creative design centers in Los Angeles on the West Coast and in New Jersey on the East Coast. This helps provide the expected uniformity of offering benefits from the digital and fabric printing capability that we have installed. The focus for OV is to continue to grow share of wallet with existing customers and to continue to onboard new accounts while also driving efficiencies in manufacturing. I turn now to slide 9, which is the earnings bridge in North America. Yeah, it's quite clear here that the US businesses, particularly OPS, was impacted by generally tough market conditions, and the volume and margins effect have been reflected in that. The positive impact of the weaker Australian dollar, which was a help during the year, was approximately $7.8 million. From a guidance point of view, a 1 cent move in the Australian dollar against the US on an annualized basis equates to approximately a $1.8 million FX translation sensitivity on EBIT and a $1.1 million sensitivity on NPAT. Looking now at slide 10, I'll hand over to Stuart to take you through that.
Great. Thanks, Nigel, and good morning or good evening, everyone. For FY19, corporate costs were $28 million, which is a slight improvement on the prior year. Just included in that, there's a couple of items to note. Transaction costs relating to the Pelican Bronco acquisitions of approximately $1.5 million are included in that number, but these have been offset by, let's call it, ongoing sound management of our corporate costs. In terms of guidance for FY20 corporate costs, basically we expect them to be broadly in line with the reported costs of this year, so somewhere around that $28-29 million mark for FY20. Just a brief comment on tax while we're on corporate matters. While we have, been positively impacted by the lower US tax rates through their recent tax reforms over there, we do operate in several other jurisdictions where rules have had an adverse impact on Aurora, and that will impact basically from FY20 onwards. This means Aurora's effective tax rate is unlikely to be materially different from historical rates going forward. So we expect average tax rates for the group to be at or around the 28% level as we move forward. In Appendix 2, there's just again, from a corporate point of view, we've included a pro forma set of financials showing the estimated impact on the profit, loss and balance sheet from the adoption of the somewhat confusing, but is what it is, lease accounting standards. So we'll be adopting the standard effective from 1 July 2019. Comparative information will not be restated, as it's not required under the standard, but we've given you the guidance there just so as you start to see our numbers reporting from here, they will be including the impact of the lease standard. Although I think in this first year, we will provide both with and without lease accounting so that we can help you understand our numbers, including for ourselves for that matter. But I think the other thing to say about the lease standard is that the NPAT point of view, the impact is unlikely to be material. It does impact specific lines, but is immaterial. And any guidance we're giving you in relation to capital, to depreciation, et cetera, in this announcement today is before the impact of the lease standard. On to slide 11, to cash flow. So again, positively from as we would see it, increased earnings were converted into cash with operating cash flow at around $270 million. This was down slightly on the prior period, but as Nigel referred to before, there was an impact in the prior year of the sale of Smithfield proceeds, which aided last year's number. Cash conversion at approximately 60% was in line with our guidance for the year, and this reflects ongoing investment in CapEx and planned inventory builds to maintain supply during capital investment programs that are underway in glass and fibre. Average working capital to sales was higher at about 10.3%, driven primarily by seasonal or capital project-related inventory builds, which Nigel referred to before. There are always opportunities to continue to improve and remain vigilant, and we expect this ratio to be back under 10% by the end of FY20 as some of these hopefully seasonal conditions come back in our favour, and certainly the capital projects which we control will be behind us at that point in time. As mentioned by Nigel earlier, a heightened level of lower risk organic capital expenditure has been a focus for Aurora for the past 18 to 24 months. And across the year, we invested approximately $180 million in this type of expenditure. The total CapEx invested represents approximately 150% of depreciation and is a positive endorsement of the strength of and management's commitment to the base businesses. In terms of guidance for net CapEx for FY20, with some residual spend on the current phase of the asset refresh program in fibre, the rebuild of G2, which includes also the new forming line, and the completion of the warehouse development at the glass facility in Gawler. Capital expenditure is expected to be approximately 120% of depreciation. And to help you there, depreciation, as I said, is before any lease accounting and is expected to be approximately $140 million. In addition to the capital, $140 million was also invested in on the acquisitions of Bronco and Pollock in North America. In terms of guidance for cash conversion, in terms of, I guess, in light of the factors that I've just talked about in terms of still an ongoing heightened level of CapEx, we're expecting cash conversion of approximately 60% again in FY20. Onto the balance sheet and our debt position. I guess the important thing for us is clearly we still have a very strong balance sheet, and that's despite the level of investment made in FY19. And it has us clearly well positioned to invest in further growth as those opportunities present, and we would see ourselves ready to invest in that type of activity. At June, net debt increased to about $890 million. Leverage is around 1.9 times, which is up from June last year, 1.5 times, and 1.8 times at December 18. The current leverage of 1.9 times is still at the lower, or essentially below the lower end of our management's target range of between 2 and 2.5 times, and as I said, provides us with the capacity to continue to explore and execute on our growth investment strategy. As a company, we remain committed to maintaining sensible debt levels and investment-grade credit metrics, and to this end, we have significant capacity and headroom in our current facilities with undrawn capacity of approximately $370 million and cash reserves of over $70 million as at 30 June. In terms of our debt facilities, refinanced and upsized our $400 million syndicated facility here in Australia, which was due to mature in December 19. This is now a $450 million facility with a maturity of April 22. And during this process, we also took the opportunity to upsize and extend our US syndicated facility from US $200 million to US $300 million with a new maturity of April 2024. The average weighted life of our facilities is now approximately 4 years. And importantly, just from a guidance point of view, these new facilities were renewed on similar commercial terms to the prior facilities. Our principal focus is to use our strong financial position to invest in acquisitions and organic growth opportunities that will generate future shareholder returns. While investing to drive organic and new growth remains the primary objective, as we have continually said, capital management options will be considered in the absence of suitable growth investments existing in our pipeline. At this point in time, I would add that capital management is not a priority at this present time. We still see a number of growth opportunities before us, but at this point in time, we are consolidating on what's before us before we pursue some of those activities. So with that, I'll now hand over to Brian, who will cover off on the Aurora Way, our sustainability initiatives, strategy, and some perspectives for the year ahead. Brian.
Thank you, Stuart. So we'll turn to page 14, which is the Aurora Way focused. And as a number of you would have heard me say 5 weeks ago when we had an introductory call relative to the Aurora Way, my plan is very much to focus on leading the business, you know, in a business as usual way in terms of how we've focused on the overall conduct of the organization and very consistent with Nigel's tenure. You know, Aurora's leaders and I will continue to place value on the importance of our organizational culture. We'll continue to invest in embedding that culture because we truly believe it drives our performance and a competitive advantage and therefore generates long-term shareholder value. And as you'll see on this chart, you know, where we represent the Aurora values, you know, a couple particularly I want to point out in terms of passion and respect, which leads into what I'll cover next in terms of sustainability. You know, they are really at the forefront of how we're focused and look at sustainability, which I'll refer to on the next chart. Anyway, our focus on sustainability is really managing through three focal areas, that is plant, people, and prosperity. And the aim is really to minimize Aurora's impact on the environment. And this includes setting eco targets and improving the sustainability of our products and our services. And Aurora's approach is guided by being a signatory to the United Nations Global Compact, or UNGC, as most people now refer to it as, you know, which requires us as an organisation to undertake specific initiatives to promote greater environmental responsibility. And while Aurora's sustainability journey is ongoing, you know, we certainly undertake actions to reduce our emissions and waste and to build a more sustainable business for the long term. And I'll cover over the next several slides some specific areas where we believe, you know, Aurora is doing, you know, a very credible job in this particular area. So on the next page, I want to cover Aurora's focus on recycling, where we're really proud to be a leading large-scale recycler, particularly in the areas of manufacturing in this part of the world. You know, Aurora collects more than 650,000 tons of old corrugated cardboard and mixed waste product nationally here in Australia. Approximately 450,000 tons of that is then fed through Aurora's recycled paper mill in Botany, and this produces in excess of 400,000 tons of paper, which is 100% recycled paper that is used to then create cardboard boxes across our Australasian and North American converting facilities. So this process creates a continuous loop of recycling from paper to cardboard and then back to paper again. If we look at our glass business, you know, within our South Australian facility, you know, we recycle approximately 80% of all the glass that's collected through the South Australian Container Deposit Scheme. And we still look for economical ways to source recycled glass from other states around the country. Within our cans business, we source aluminium coils that contain approximately 70% of recycled aluminium. And during our can production, leftover aluminium is collected and sold back to the aluminium manufacturers for recycling. And our North American operations, particularly our cardboard corrugated manufacturing, which is part of our OPS business, contains approximately 55% recycled content, and this is largely sourced from our B9 operations. We turn to slide 17. You know, Aurora has signed two long-term power purchase agreements with renewable energy providers to supply wind-generated electricity for Aurora's operations in South Australia, Victoria and New South Wales, where we operate our largest and most energy-intensive facilities. And under these PPAs, Aurora has secured supply of renewable energy, which is equivalent to about 80% of all of our requirements, and it provides us some long-term stability in terms of both supply and in terms of energy costs. We've also invested approximately $25 million in a secondary water treatment facility at a Botany paper mill, which has been commissioned and came online from late 2018. And a further $10 million has been invested across a number of our operations in a wide range of initiatives to improve energy efficiency within Australia and New Zealand. So we're continuing to invest across the board, and we're also looking at renewable energy opportunities and exploring areas such as cogeneration and small-scale solar opportunities at certain sites that we have located around the country. Slide 18 looks specifically at our ECHO targets. And at the time of demerger in 2013, Aurora set some ECHO targets that we would aim to achieve by 30th of June 2019. And outlined in this chart, these defined Aurora's goals to reduce the energy intensity of greenhouse gas emissions, waste to landfill, and water use across the business. And I'm really proud to announce that Aurora has achieved these targets, including reducing CO2 emissions by 28%, reduced the waste to landfill volumes by also 28%, and reducing our water usage by 15%. And we will be setting new ECHO targets during the next during this upcoming financial year. On page 19, you know, there's a focus in terms of what we're doing from a product perspective, looking at sustainable packaging solutions. We're working closely with our customers and looking at investment opportunities and how we can develop innovative recycling packaging alternatives to help reduce the impact on the environment. So in addition to the proven and existing technologies and capabilities we have within the current portfolio, we're trialing a number of new packaging formats such as fiber trays, fiber-based punnets, and even a paper-based bubble wrap product, which is very innovative and new to the market. So while a number of these will have varying times to commercialize, our clear intent at Orora is to be a leader in bringing these initiatives to market. We'll now turn to slide 21, which is Orora's blueprint for creating shareholder value. There is a really a multifaceted approach comprising of, you know, first of that being organic growth. And across Australasia and North America, this is underpinned by good market structures and opportunities. And it's enhanced by continued investment in innovation. And this is also supplemented by a returns-focused approach to allocating capital towards investments across three specific avenues. The first being organic growth capital, which entails investment in existing businesses backed by a customer. An example of this is the expansion of our capacity for new sleek cans, where we recently put an investment in New Zealand, and also the warehouse expansion that Nigel referred to recently for our glass business in South Australia. The second, which is bolt-on M&A, and that's largely been focused on expanding our geographical footprint, primarily in North America, with acquisitions like Pollock and Bronco, and the third being adjacent M&A, which entails parallel packaging substrates or markets, and this would be the initial expansion into North American pulp market. And while I'll always look to enhance what we do in this particular area, you know, as of today, I see no reason to substantially change this value creation model. We have the capacity to comfortably invest between $150 and $200 million per annum in growth initiatives, and we invested at this level in FY19. We also aim to provide shareholders a steady income stream through a sustainable dividend, where we seek a payout ratio of between 60 and 70% of profit after tax. And slide 22, we summarise how Orora has been executing its growth investment agenda since listing in 2013. Having now invested approximately $675 million in return-generating investments. And based on the success of recent organic investments, Orora plans to continue to invest to support organic growth, as well as ensuring effective investment of frequent acquisitions. I'd like to reiterate that, as appropriate, Orora will continue to explore and evaluate a pipeline of acquisition targets that are expected to be return accretive. However, the focus at the moment is on consolidating and integrating recent investments. Slide 23. Turning to the focus that we've had in terms of what we committed to deliver versus what we have delivered, we're firmly committed to generating shareholder value. And I think if you went through the items on this, you know, we would clearly believe we've held up our end of the commitment in terms of what we've been expected to deliver over the last financial year. Our perspectives on 2020. The markets that Orora operates in are expected to remain challenging, especially North America, and Nigel covered a number of the challenges that we've had over the past 12 months there. However, with the recent announcements about our restructuring initiatives and the earnings improvement programs that have been bolstered now by some external resources, we do expect to drive the business forward during FY20. The success of recent organic capital investment supports management's ongoing investment in CapEx, so do expect CapEx to be invested at approximately 120% of depreciation, as Stuart had indicated previously. Capital does include the G2 rebuild, as we've previously disclosed, and this does have an adverse impact on earnings in the second half of FY20 of approximately $8 million, and this should largely reverse as we get into FY21. The Australasian business as a whole is a strong and resilient business for us, and as it has done consistently to offset ongoing cost headwinds, and in addition to pursuing growth, the Australasian part of the business will continue to identify and implement cost reduction opportunities such as we've done with the restructuring initiative. We'll invest in asset upgrades, new capacity, new sites, and we'll use the Aurora Global Innovation Initiative to support this business ongoing. Approximately 50% of the significant item restructuring charge announced earlier in August relates to the Australasian business, and we expect to deliver a return of approximately 30% in FY20. Aurora has successfully secured some new gas supply arrangements with multiple parties for the next 2 years. The anticipated net cost headwinds for the gas price increase in the second half of FY20 will be approximately $3.5 million. We also have increases in kraft paper and insurance premiums that are expected to impact earnings by a further $5 million and $3 million respectively. Our OCC commodity price volatility is expected to continue, as we've seen over the last year, and our sensitivity to that remains unchanged relative to previous guidance, and that is a $10 per tonne movement in OCC price represents a gross annualised impact of approximately $500,000 at the EBIT line. The focus for North American business is to consolidate and deliver on the restructuring programs. This is both to drive growth and improve cost efficiency. OPS is focused on successfully integrating Pollock and Bronco and driving the expected synergies as soon as practical. Approximately 40% of the SI restructuring charge is in North America and is expected to deliver approximately a 30% return in FY20. The consolidation of the Aurora Visual acquisitions continues to drive the business forward towards our expected returns. Increased insurance costs have also impacted our North American operations to the tune of approximately $1.5 million. And finally, as you're aware, this is Nigel's last results briefing before retiring at the end of September. So I'd like to thank him for his outstanding contribution to Aurora over the past 10 years, and especially since the time of demerger in 2013, and like to wish him all the best for the future. You know, personally thank him for his support during my 8 years with the organisation and his support during this transition period, you know, which is certainly helping myself be well prepared to continue to lead the organisation in the future. I'm really honoured to be able to take on this position. I'm really pleased that our chairman, Chris Roberts, has decided to delay his retirement to continue on into calendar year 2020 to support the transition also. And today you also would have noted that as a further confidence in Aurora's future, we have announced the appointment of Tom Gorman as a new director. And Tom is a US-based director whom many of you would know, I'm sure, from his time as CEO of Brambles and having been on the board of several Australian listed companies. And Tom will join us from the 2nd of September 2019. And on the last slide, to summarise, you know, as a matter of course, we don't provide specifics around earning guidance. However, what I can say is that to help offset challenging market conditions and cost headwinds, in FY20, we'll continue to invest in efficiency and growth and innovation, as well as to integrate our recent acquisitions. So thank you for your time and attention today, and now I'd like to turn it over to the operator, where Nigel, Stuart, and I will be happy to take your questions.